The information age has made Americans arguably the most informed generation in all of human history. Millions of American kids carry virtual libraries of information in their hip pockets these days via their smartphones. Yet some still labeled this generation of smartphone aficionados the dumbest generation. Now, how is this possible? Well, we'll explore that very question and more next on Licensed to Parent. Hello and welcome to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta. Our host is the founder and the executive director of Shepherd's Hill, Trace Embry, and I'm Rich Rozzle. And Trace, we talk regularly on Licensed to Parent about our concern for the dumbing down of today's American young people, as well as our nation and our church. And as we discovered the last time we had today's guest on the program, we are not the only folks noticing this, nor are we the only ones concerned about it.
Well, that's right, Rich. I'm more convinced now than ever that our kids are being inundated with an arsenal of useless information that is not only being used to pollute their minds, but also used to argue against what generations gone by have known to be good, right, and just since the beginning of time. You know, it's information that's too often used to promote carnal lusts and evil rather than information that can promote positive development for mankind. You know, if one's presuppositions about marijuana, for example, is that it's not just fun, but healthy and should be legalized, you can go to the internet and find out all the best arguments for your case.
Sure.
But, you know, it isn't just marijuana. It's a multitude of other harmful things, attitudes and options.
That's very true. And our guest today, by the way, is someone who would probably mirror those things. He is also a repeat offender, as we mentioned a moment ago. His name is Mark Bauerlein. He's a professor of English at Emory University in Atlanta. We don't normally have professors here, but it's always nice to have one who not only speaks well, but speaks well on a subject that's very near and dear to us. Mark has also worked, by the way, as the Director of Research and Analysis at the National Endowment for the Arts, where he oversaw studies about culture and American life. And he's the author of a book that we absolutely love called The Dumbest Generation: How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. And though he joined us by phone a few months ago, we really connected with Mark. We invited him to come up to Shepherd's Hill and speak to our teens. And lo and behold, here he is in the studio with us.
Mark, welcome back to the broadcast. It's good to have you in the studio.
I am glad to join you.
Well, you're going to be speaking to our kids right here at Shepherd's Hill after the broadcast. Are you ready for that?
I think
answer
so.
Carefully.
You know, I talk a lot to teenagers, and one of the things I want to do is really give them the chance to talk back. This is a book that is pretty critical.
Sure.
of those people that age. And if you're going to do a book like that, which is a provocation, a challenge, the responsible thing as a grown-up or teacher to do is to stand up and let them talk back.
Sure.
So and listen.
So how do you approach a kid from this generation without offending them, or is offending them not really such a big – I don't think it is a big issue. I think some people need to be offended in a positive way sometimes. But how do you approach them knowing that they are really – at least their generation is the subject of what you've written about here?
Well, I think first your demeanor and your overall purpose has to come through as one that is attentive, that you are saying this because you are interested in the fate of young people. What happens to them when they're 30 is of crucial importance to you. You make them realize, look, I am here to try to be constructive. I'm to offer you a voice and an opportunity to engage that you're not going to get from your friends.
And they can smell whether you're genuine or not.
You know, I'm a teacher. Within 1 week, the students sense whether you're there or not, or whether you're just mailing it in.
That's right.
And you can't fake it. When you're up in front of the class, you have to be yourself. You will be what you are, and they will sense, is this guy someone who respects me as an individual, who cares enough about my mind to tell me the truth, to challenge me? Or in some cases, we get the teacher who shows up, who really wants to be on the wavelength of the kids, who wants to be a friend of the kids. they know the fraudulence of that approach, and they want you. I'm very critical of the students, but I would swear that they are desperate for an authoritative voice, not an authoritarian voice, but a voice that's going to stand above them and lay out with respect, but lay out to them what are the stakes and how are they heading for a fall? How are they setting themselves up for failures? Mm-hmm. They want someone to lay out those boundaries and limits and parameters and ideals.
Parents, I hope you're listening to this because this transfers over to parents as well. I think when you conduct your affairs, as you just described, that you give yourself a license to step on their toes. And I think that they're more apt to listen to what you have to say. I mean, you look at Simon Cowell on American Idol. This is a guy who seems to get a little pleasure out of being sadistic. But nonetheless, people still respect him for the very fact that he will tell them the truth. They at least know they're getting the truth. And they'll put themselves through torture to find out the genuine truth.
When you offer to them the clear and sincere judgment, and they do challenge themselves to do better next time, when you sit down and say to them, this time, this was a darn good job, that means something to them.
Oh, yeah.
If you're softening up, if you're flattening your standards, then their superior achievement, when they do rise to that level, it just doesn't mean that much to them.
That's right. And you compliment them for a mediocre job, and you compliment them at every turn for everything, then when you do genuinely feel they've done something extremely well, to them it's just, well, you know.
You've cheapened the compliment.
You absolutely. It's like everyone's a winner. You know, I got a trophy just for showing up.
Right.
You know, what's the point?
And my experience is I teach at Emory University, so we get pretty strong students. But my experience is that they'll rise to where you set the bar.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you set it low.
That's right.
That's where they'll come out. You set it high. Yeah. They'll fail a few times, but they'll work harder.
I've said many times on this broadcast that kids will do what's required of them. The problem is we don't often require too much. But when it comes to educating our kids, who or what should decide what information is more important than others in the first place? I mean, how is this prioritized?
Well, you have, first of all, and what is becoming more and more the case when kids get to college is this big looming job situation. Mm-hmm. That's the career, the preparation for that. And you say, okay, what is going to make me walk into that job interview? What is going to make me be in that office and be prized, be appreciated? What am I going to bring to this small company, to this media group, wherever you end up in the workplace? What is going to make it so that I'm one others come to, that I'm of value and I'm respected for having that value? So we want to acknowledge, first of all, just the economic realities of their future when they graduate. We also want to look at the humanistic side, the values, the taste that students have, the ideals that they form, the beliefs, the faith, the deep understanding of traditions of the past, of something like, why is religious liberty so important in our country? Much of what they get in contemporary culture is going to look at religious liberty and range anywhere from, oh, that's oppressive, to, eh, who cares about religious liberty? Well, you start teaching them the Puritans, what religious liberty meant to them. The founders, what religious liberty meant to them. What all the presidents and leaders in our country just deeply understood as essential to our country. I see that in the last, well, maybe going back to the 60s, but certainly in the last few years, religious liberty is on the run. And if students don't, if young people don't acquire from their teachers that sense of the past, we will lose, I think, that religious liberty. So that's just a case where we go well beyond economic realities to building deeper feelings of citizenship and humanity out of the best materials of the past.
Couldn't the dumbing down of the youthful masses actually be an advantage to those kids who haven't fallen victim to this cultural declension?
I often have very bright students email me and say, well, here's what I do. I read, I look at the newspapers, I follow issues, I love great art. And I write back and I say, yeah, you are obviously ambitious youth who's going places, but you're not representative. You are exceptional.
Right.
And you're going to, and the silver lining for you individually is the more your peers don't read books, the better you look.
That's right.
You will. The cream will rise to the top very quickly. And you know, we do have, 7-10% of real super kids in high schools today. They're piling up the AP courses. They're doing volunteer programs over the summer. They're building up this amazing resume. They do homework 25 hours a week.
And we falsely believe that this is representative of the masses.
Well, and one reason we do is because a lot of the journalists who write about education, that's their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they live in those zip codes, where a lot of the kids are like that. But look, when we get out of that 10%, things drop very quickly. 57% of the high school students in this country do 1 hour or less of reading and studying per week, not per day, per week.
Mm-hmm.
This is self-reported. It's the Indiana University High School Survey of Student Engagement. These are very reliable figures, a huge survey. They don't do much homework at all.
Well, 60% of the kids in the county you're in right now won't graduate. 60%. And 60% of the county next door won't graduate.
That's discouraging.
Let's take a step back, though, because these things that you're talking about are critically important, and we're looking at them from the aspect of the educational system. But let's replace educator with the word parent and see how some of these same things apply. I love what you said earlier, Mark, about we can be critical and we can point out the stresses and the failures, and we can bring the truth to these kids and hold them accountable for it. But if we do it with respect and we do it in these other ways, they can still learn something from that. You also talked about setting the standard and holding it. How does this fit into the parent wanting to do that? Because the parent, by the way, is not looking at what job Junior is going to get as the primary focus of raising the child. So talk about setting that bar high from a parenting standpoint.
The first thing parents need to realize today, those parents who want their children to develop strong character, to live out the Sermon on the Mount, to live out the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, that parent needs to realize that he or she is in a war.
That's right.
And on one side, we have the parent's instruction, and that's casual instruction, the things the parent exposes the child to, and the culture in the household.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side is youth culture and peer pressure, which floods into young people's lives like never before.
And is magnified a zillion times over with social media.
We've got texting now.
Mm-hmm.
We look at the bedroom. The child's bedroom now is not a private space. It's a social space. We have the laptop or the tablet that connects the child to all the celebrity websites and the YouTube videos of Lady Gaga and the pornography. And then we have TV, which now purveys programming to teenagers 24 hours a day on a dozen different channels and is filled with coarseness and vulgarity and stupidity.
Even in cartoon form.
I was looking at old cartoons the other day. Do you remember the music that was typical of Bugs Bunny?
Sure.
It was classical music.
Sure.
You had class. It was funny.
Yeah.
They would do funny things with the classical music.
Yeah.
Bugs Bunny did it. Bugs Bunny did a famous Barber of Seville.
I was just thinking of that.
That was the big example. Or Fantasia.
Sorry, I'm just.
No, that was it. But today, you turn on the TV and you scan through. You've got MTV, you've got other the hip hop channels, you've got all the TV shows, the reality shows that are oriented toward teenagers. We have people behaving badly, idiotically,
and being rewarded
immorally
for it.
And being rewarded. Well, one, simply they've got a camera.
Yeah.
They're on screen. They're famous. They're famous for being bad. Well, hey, they're famous. That's what counts. So we have that just youth culture, an avalanche pouring into young people's lives. And then we have peer pressure coming in through the cell phone, which today exchanges about 3,500 text messages per month on average. That's according to Nielsen Media. We've got the email and the Facebook and the Twitter, and everything else that connects youths to their friends, their own age group, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're in the back seat of their parents' car on Highway 85 in the middle of nowhere. They're still doing a social life. They're in bed at midnight. They're still doing a social life. So parents, this is something you couldn't imagine.
That's right.
When you were 17 years old.
And almost all a superficial type of interaction as well. It's not any deep relational type stuff.
No. I mean, what can you communicate in a Twitter tweet or text messages? Mm-hmm. That's right. So parents, you are in the midst of a contest. What is going to be the primary influence in your teenagers' lives? And you have to be more vigilant than certainly my parents ever had to be.
Yeah.
And so that's the first recognition. It's always going on. And so you have to deliberately develop a counterculture for your kids.
Be intentional.
Go to church.
Yeah.
You have to talk, have conversations with your kids. You have to take them to museums or libraries, bookstores, historic sites. You need to get them involved in things where they break out of the youth circuit, the youth culture. Get them away. Give them forms of responsibility. Here, we were just talking a few minutes ago about how a lot of the kids here take up the caretaking of animals.
Mm-hmm.
That right there
is
a responsibility. You're responsible for another life that is completely disconnected from the lives of your friends.
And you might jumpstart them into an interest you never knew they had.
That's right. And they're not going to get jumpstarted into that if they are intensely connected with one another. The youth world is all about the youth world.
Right. And there's no margin really to get out of that youth world unless someone, you know, drives a wedge, makes some margin and convinces these kids that, hey, listen, there is a life beyond these buttons and screens.
We're talking with Mark Bauerlein. He's author of the book, The Dumbest Generation, How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. The program is Licensed to Parent, coming to you from a horse farm in northeast Georgia. This is Shepherd's Hill Academy. We'll be back with more conversation with Mark right after this. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face-to-face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting LicensedToParent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at LicensedToParent.org. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org. helpmytroubledteen.org. This is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, coming to you from our horse farm just north of Atlanta. I'm Rich Rosl, along with our host, Trace Embry. And our guest today is Mark Bauerlein, author of the book, The Dumbest Generation, How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future. And real quickly, I remembered that the conversation that you alluded to a moment ago, Mark, about the kids here at Shepherd's Hill taking care of animals, we actually had that conversation prior to our recording today. We do have a horse farm. There are 30-some horses here, and each student, I guess, who comes here is assigned or paired up with an animal, right. And they take care of each other for the year that these kids are here. And that's right. It's a very large responsibility, but very eye-opening for a lot of these kids who suddenly have a responsibility of a 1,500-pound animal that they've never had before.
Right. Well, Mark, I wanted to ask you, why are history and civics so important to teach in the public school system? Because I think that's something that's kind of going away, isn't it?
It is deteriorating. And I think there are a few reasons for that. But first, I'll say, why is it important that young people know the Bill of Rights? Why is it important that they understand some of the debates surrounding the ratification of the U.S. Constitution? Why should they know about the progressive movement from 100 years ago or the civil rights movement? The civil rights movement is probably one of the few items that is still, and slavery, still adhered to everywhere in the high school curriculum. But the general question of why know those things? And the simple answer is that in a democracy, sovereignty is supposed to reside in the people. It is not residing in a king or a church. These are aristocratic, monarchical, or theocratic societies. It's not supposed to rest in a dictator, as under the Soviet Union or communist China, 1950s. Where sovereignty resides in one authoritarian figure. It's supposed to reside in the people. The people have the responsibility of maintaining the health of the civic fabric. How are you going to do that when you don't know
right. What
the civic fabric is supposed to be?
But you even have to, beyond that, you have to know where the reference point for what a healthy society even looks like.
And you know, you can still go back to the founders on just those issues as they are laying
them out. Who are getting
bum-wrapped
for being slave owners and adulterers and philanderers. I mean, so these are things that we have to consider when we start using the founders as our point of reference for being good guys. And I realize that this is grossly inflated in the eyes of the progressives, quote-unquote, but we still have to deal with that. And I'll ask you, how do you deal with that there in Emory?
What I tell them is that there was a group of men, mostly, who came together at a particular time and produced something miraculous. And the miracle is measured by several things. One, it is the longest-running government on Earth right now, the most stable government on Earth. They produced something that allowed us to get through legal, political, economic crises.
Even a civil war,
a bloodiest war in history up until that time. And they were able to make something that everyone respects so much that when we have elections in this country, no one thinks that the government is going to collapse. No one here worries that the military is going to take over. We've got such a good system despite all of the problems with it, they produced such a great model that we take it all for granted.
I've heard it said it's the worst system on the planet, except for all the rest.
Someone show us a better one. And that we became the model for every other prosperous country on Earth.
And that's why France sent the Tocqueville over here in 1831 to find out what made us tick.
Yeah, we were an experiment. And at first, there were very few people on Earth who believed that our experiment would survive. You're going to let the people vote every few years on your leaders? Are you crazy? This is a mob. Mm-hmm.
Well, we should point out, though, that back when that was set up, the people who were voting were educated people. Not everybody had the full vote in those days. It was primarily landowners. I'm talking about right at the very first, but it wasn't educated people voting in this republic. And that's what you're alluding to, is that we have to study these things. We have to know about them and understand them so that we can effectively vote and bring about proper change.
And to know that...
Here's something. The founders put a free press into the First Amendment. They hated journalists. They despised the press.
Funny, things haven't changed that much.
But they put it in because they knew that if you don't have a watchdog group, you'll have no accountability. People will operate in the corridors of power, and they'll do it and corruption will spread if you don't have this. So now, that only works if the people are paying attention. A free press doesn't do anything. A watchdog doesn't do anything. Investigations don't do anything if no one is paying attention.
Or if the watchdogs abdicate their role of being watchdogs, which does happen.
Sure. It's happening right now.
Exactly.
The press has become very much of a cheerleader for the Democratic Party.
Gentlemen, I need to jump in here and interrupt because we are out of time on today's program. Mark, we'd like to continue this conversation and use it next time, if that'd be okay.
I am ready to join you.
Great. Thank you.
Our guest today has been Mark Bauerlein. Mark is a professor of English at Emory University in Atlanta. He is also the author of the book, The Dumbest Generation: How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. You'll find that book on Amazon.com or at thedumbestgeneration.com. Licensed to Parent is the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy in Martin, Georgia. We are listener-supported, so it's gifts from people like you that make it possible for us to continue our work with troubled teens and our work with their parents. Please consider making a donation to this ministry when you visit us at licensedtoparent.org. And while you're there, be sure to check out our blog, our parenting resources, archives of past programs, and links that will connect you with us via Facebook and Twitter. That website, once again, is licensedtoparent.org. That is all the time we have on today's broadcast. On behalf of Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rossel. Thanks for listening. Please be sure to join us again next time to renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else or something else will. God bless you. See you next time.